Hey guys, what's going on? Welcome to the show. Welcome back. It is another AfterBuzz TV After Show. We are talking about Cobra Kai, the YouTube sensation. We are so excited to talk to you guys. We're going to be breaking down part one, the first couple episodes, which you can catch for free on YouTube Premium right now. Stick with us. We're going to see you guys in just one quick second.
You're tuning into the destination for TV superfan discussion, AfterBuzz TV. And now, let the buzz begin.
Oh, it's back! We get the Karate Kid 1 song!
That's right!
Yeah, we're the best, guys. Oh. We're the best around. No one's gonna ever keep us down.
Nah.
Right?
Just
nah.
Get
right?
The chills. Just we're hearing here. This, being here, I'm like...
Yeah, this makes me want to fight All Valley.
Greatest
right
series.
Makes me want to sweep the leg.
Yeah, sweep the leg! Sweep the leg! No, we're good guys.
Are you guys
good
guys? Bag?
I want to know. Okay. What's going on, guys? Welcome back. Welcome to the show. It's AfterBuzz TV. We're here. It's a Sunday night. We're excited to talk to you guys about Cobra Kai. This is the first hit show from YouTube. Truthfully, I mean, this is the first
absolutely
high-profile original piece of content.
Put YouTube on the map and has opened the doors for so many other past series and franchises now because they know you've got that built-in audience.
Yeah, 100%. So guys, we are going to be breaking down all of the episodes of Cobra Kai. This is part one. We're going to be talking about the first couple episodes, our general thoughts. We are going to have a discussion at the end of this bit about really, who's the bully in the Karate Kid franchise? And specifically in this show, who do we think is the good guy? Who do we think is the bad guy? I want to know from my panel, who I'm going to introduce right now, what team you guys are. You guys good or you bad? I'm going to start right here. Mr. Kevin Undergaro.
Wait, I don't want to give away what team I'm on
okay,
yet.
Okay, we'll see.
I'm not ready. But I'm, as I already said, I'm obsessed with this series. I like many people, I watched it all in one sitting. And I've been just dying to talk about it. I'm sorry. I'm so excited.
Yeah, I'm overwhelmed. I can't freaking wait. We got Rick Hong.
Hello, guys. How's it going? Same thing. I watched this in one sitting. I couldn't. I was like, I can't leave the house today. I've got to finish watching this as soon as I watch the pilot.
And Rick, where can the folks find you?
You guys can find me on all social media at Rick Hong, RCKHONG.
Excellent. And Veronica, we have a brand new host. We're so excited.
Welcome to the show. By the way, Veronica just joined the dojo.
I did.
She's rookie.
She's a white belt.
I'm right at the very bottom.
So you were being bullied at high school, and then you came to AfterBuzz, and this is your first show. And we're going to teach you the ways. But we don't know if we're going to teach you Cobra Kai or Miyagi.
Yeah, you can fight dirty afterwards. We don't know. You're going to have to find
out. Will I get my placement
yourself
at the end of this after show?
Yeah.
Will I find out where I go?
Exactly.
Yes. All right.
The end of part one, we're going to see. Do you get a uniform? Is it a black uniform, white uniform? I don't know. Ooh. We're going to find out.
Okay, it's going to be forward. How old are you?
What was that?
How old are you?
24.
And okay, so 24-year-old female... Who were you even born when?
No.
Okay, when Karate Kid came out, mm-hmm. And yet, had you seen Karate Kid the movie before this series?
Oh yeah, 100%. Like okay. My parents really were like, "Hey, you would like this movie," and I got into it and became obsessed.
Okay, so therefore you share our sentiment for the series.
100%.
Wow. By the way, like if you're a producer, that's such a winner that you're hitting all these
100%.
Generations.
Oh yeah. I mean, you talk a lot about this, and I kind of want to just know your guys' general thoughts on the show, but. There are so few pieces of intellectual property that have ever been created that you could do something like this with and have this kind of success. Karate Kid is truly one of the few.
Truly one of the few.
It's 34 years later, and it's actually lasted. It's like, I mean, this movie's older than me, the first movie.
I think you're going to see many more people follow this model, but like anything, when you do copies, you're going to see so many colossal fails.
Well, because reboots, yep, you know? By and large, don't work. This one worked.
Well, here's the thing. Reboots haven't worked in the past because you're going movie to movie reboot.
Right.
But when you're going movie to series, to TV series, because the TV audiences are shrinking and going and fragmented and going to so many different places, you know, if you're a money guy and you're putting up your money, would you want to put money on a new series that no one's heard of, right? And try to get it out there in the best way you can, pay millions of dollars in marketing, or a series that has an established fan base already?
Of course.
Well, not
so
only-
it's an easier bet.
Yeah, well, not only an established fan base, but this movie and the series has a great sense of nostalgia, and that's what a lot of, I feel, these reboots are doing these days,
right.
Is they are they are getting those audiences from, like, all these 90s movies and shows and these 80s movies and shows, and they're bringing it back to this audience, and they're like, wow.
Well, speaking of which, and I'd love to know your just general thoughts on the series, with that nostalgia, do you feel like that was an overwhelming experience, or do you think that it was balanced well?
I thought it was really balanced. I liked how the writing made it its own stories, but there was all the fun Easter eggs that we got to see from, you know, the All Valley tournament, the flashbacks, and even how they sliced it all together with original clips from the movie. I thought it was very well balanced. I've never felt like I was watching a carbon copy.
Right. Right. Rick, you're maybe the biggest Karate Kid fan I know. So how did you feel about just the general tone of the show?
Man, I loved it. You're talking to a guy, I mean, granted, I'm only 15 years old, but you're talking to a guy that saw Karate Kid in the theater, number one, Karate Kid number two in the theater, Karate Kid number three in the theater when they were all released, Karate Kid 4, no.
You didn't see it in theaters.
I saw that thing on VHS tape, I think. Maybe I did see it in the theater, but this, yeah, I don't know if the setup, since it was YouTube Red, the setup was like, brought my expectations low.
Right.
But after watching it, like I said, when I watched that pilot, can't leave the house. Right. Can't leave the house, and I finished it one day.
It's another example too. If you're a showrunner or you're a channel, you got to invest, and they spent the money. You know, they spent the money and the detail. And the three executive producers on this were not only very talented writers who, like, this is their sweet spot. We know Hot Tub Time Machine,
right? Harold and Kumar,
and on top of it, they are genuine fanboys of the product. You know, a lot of times. I'll tell you, just in TV writing history, I can't tell you how many times writers get hired for reboots, sequels, and are not fans of the original show. And they come in and they're mercenaries just to take the money, and you can tell them the product. But these guys were genuine fans. They loved it.
I mean, in each one of the interviews that you've seen with Ralph, with the team, they have talked about the writing team. That's the first names they say. How did this thing happen? And they rifle off three names, and it's like, it's literally the vision these three guys had, and that's how this thing worked. You know, it's not like, oh, we were always going to go back to the old material at some point, but these guys just made it happen. It was kind of like, these guys created something really special, and that's why you're seeing what you're seeing. Because it is unusual. I mean, this is a long time. These, you know, I want to talk about each character. So, I mean, I think let's jump in with Johnny, just because that's the brilliant part of the show for me, is that it's through his eyes.
Mm-hmm.
That's the brilliance of the idea, if you're pitching this idea. Because I'll be honest with you guys, if 2 years ago, before I knew this was ever happening, if somebody was to say to me, hey, we're going to get the stars of Karate Kid, we're going to make a 10-part streaming series, we're going to put it behind a paywall on YouTube, and we're going to expect it to be a hit, I'd be like, ha, okay, well, next idea. Because, like, I don't believe in that. I don't expect YouTube
to. I would have totally believed in it, Rick. Would you have drank the Kool-Aid at that point?
I would need to hear the pitch. Like, the two guys, like, I would have to hear the passion behind it and the pitch to maybe say yes or no. But, right, but then saying, yeah, we're going to put it on YouTube, right? I'm like, what? You know, I was like,
I'd have to pay just for the curiosity.
Okay, interesting. Yeah, it was bad.
Could you keep me? That's a different story, but.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think, you know, it's funny if we start talking to Johnny, let's take a step back and talk about William Zabka.
Of course, yeah.
Because really, he was the first piece of the puzzle. If you know that, the three creators took a lunch with him, and I heard an interview with him back in 2011, and he was saying because of Hot Tub Time Machine, he had an appearance in that, so he knew one of the creators there. And he said, you know, we're going to be getting together soon for lunch, and I'm hoping, this is what he said in the interview, I'm hoping they're going to pitch me Hot Tub Time Machine 2. legit, and this is in 2011. He has no idea, as he's doing this interview, that probably, more than likely, whatever that lunch was where they sat with him to pitch this idea. So he was. So if you know what happened, he's blown away by the fact they even want to do this. And then he I know he ended it by saying, well. He said, do you have Ralph Macchio on board? And they said, no, not yet. And he's like, wow, good luck with that.
Yeah, right.
He thought it was going to be over. But I know one of his concerns was, he said, is Johnny the bad guy? Because he said, something effective, it's Pandora's box. And maybe there might even be psychological ramifications for him. Because if you look at his career, 80s, he was our quintessential villain.
Yeah, he was always the bad guy.
And then disappears.
Yeah, he didn't have. I mean, he worked a lot over the years, but he didn't work in high profile projects.
Right. Now, he goes up and wins an Oscar. He's nominated for an Oscar for his short film as a director. He also directs a music video incorporating all the characters from Karate Kid that got millions of views. But as far as, you know, even Ralph had, Macho had much more success, My Cousin Vinny, and Dancing with the Stars, you know. So, so he's blown away, but he does say, like, it might be a little bit too close to home. And they assure him, no, it's his perspective, it's great. And you know what motivated these three writers was two lines that he said in the original movie, which his first line was something like, I only get one more year to figure this out, I'm at the end of my rope. And his last line, which was, you know, hey, LaRusso, you're not bad, or
yeah,
whatever.
You're all right, LaRusso.
Yeah, you're all right, right, LaRusso. And you know, and that's what ignited the writers to say, you know what, there's more to this guy, and we're going to base it off that. And they heard, I believe they heard him talking on the DVD commentary of the original Karate Kid, and that's what inspired them to say, you know what, let's do this. So it starts with him, and of course it needs to.
Yeah, I think, you know? I mean, I think William Zabka is pretty darn good shape. He's like, I think
yeah, well, let's talk about that.
Guy's in his late 50s. And
he's, no, he's not. He's 52.
He's 52. Okay,
he's 52.
Macho's late 50s.
Macho's yeah, 56, okay. And you know, but
yeah,
which is mind blowing. You know, but with Zabka, what did you guys overall thoughts on his look, his acting, even his karate? I'm curious.
I thought his acting was terrific. I'll be honest. I think that there's a thing that happens sometimes.
Why are you laughing, Rick?
Yeah.
Because what I like, no, because I agree. I absolutely agree with Ben. Sorry, Ben, but like, it was a choreography. You know, like in that, there's like the scene where he does a kick. He's like, oh, you know,
yeah, right.
You can't do the same time a kick when you're you know, in high school versus when you're an old man. And like, I loved how they executed that. That's what I was laughing when you were saying he's in good shape. I was like, yes, he is. And then like,
yeah,
in terms of like how old he's supposed to be.
For me, like I think sometimes you have actors with great range, and sometimes you have actors who are cast really well to play one part. And I don't know what his range is. I haven't watched a lot of the movies we're talking about over the years. But what I can say is that this character and the expansion of this character, because truthfully, in the original movies, it's not like he has the opportunity to show a tremendous amount of range. He's kind of an 80s villain. Like that's what it was. They mm-hmm. gave him the opportunity to show some humanity with his character, and he really, I think, knocks it out of the park. I mean, that scene when he's watching Iron Eagle in the first episode and the speech is happening, I was like, that was a total, and you see him tearing up. And then I got a fist pump moment. I was like, I'm so excited for this show.
Yes.
Oh,
like, all right, rookie, what do you think?
I thought he did a great job. I thought that for this particular series, he nailed it for me, because it was, as you said, it was a chance to see him grow into this role as Johnny. Like in the first movie, he just kind of popped in and out. He was a villain. But like here, he was able to show like, okay, you know, I am kind of still a villain, but you know, I also have people I care about, and so you were able to see him grow better, and I loved it. I loved how he executed that.
Yeah, the fact that they start with that old footage, I think, is key. I think it really puts you right back there.
You know, for me, I was he did play the quintessential villain. Again, dealing with his interviews, he talks about Back to School. He actually was trying to, if you recall, his bad guy character in Back to School, the Rodney Dangerfield classic, he was infusing a lot of comedy. And they cut a lot of it out. But he said, you know, here's what remained. You know, that screw you, Nellen. Like, he knew.
Sure, right, yeah.
Ouch! You know, when he heard he had a cramp.
Sure, yeah.
But he went there to show his comedic range. And he's like, they pulled it back. For me, I think he shows incredible range, because this is not Johnny from Karate Kid. This is now a Johnny who's broken.
Yeah.
Sad. Think of all the range of emotions, and he's on this arc in this journey. You know, in the first movie, he doesn't arc. He's just dick, 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 boom, loses. You know, and his arc, I guess, briefly is, hey, loser, you're okay. But in this, no, I think he's unbelievable. I think he shows incredible range. And I will tell you guys, as an actor and as a director, acting is like a muscle. It's like anything. It's like writing, directing, like anything. And if you don't exercise that muscle, it goes. And that's why sometimes you ever notice where your favorite stars come back and do something 10 or 15, they do the character 15, 20 years later, and they're a little off.
Yeah, right.
They're a little soft. It's because it is a muscle. And the fact that this guy comes back like this and is even better, and I think physically, I mean, to me, he doesn't look in his 50s.
No.
I think he looks fantastic. And again, it's not cosmetic surgery, because we'd be able to tell. And he's not a guy that, you know, came from stupid money. His dad was working class within the business. He was a production manager and AD. I've gushed enough about William Zabka, but I was blown away by him.
Do you think that, just a non sequitur on him, but do you think there's awards consideration here for this part? Do you think there's a potential Emmy?
Oh,
they're talking about it. They're talking about it.
The series 100% reviewed on Rotten Tomatoes right now. 100%.
And number one streamed show.
I do not trust the TV Academy on that realm.
Yeah,
you can't compare. I'm sorry, but like, you can't compare William Zabka. I love it. Like I said, I'm behind this 100%. I would push for that campaign.
Yeah.
But you can't use him and then say he's on the caliber of Jon Hamm Mad Men. I mean, John Hamm's not here right now, but like, in terms of like, when you're saying who wins and who,
I think you this could be one of those situations where Beasts of No Nation got a lot of attention because it was the first theatrically released Netflix film, and it had Idris, and people were like, oh, we're going to take this movie seriously. This could be the first one, and people take him seriously in this performance just for that reason and no other reason. I mean, it might actually get more attention than you think. We will see. I want to make sure we cover everything we can here, so let's continue moving through. Johnny meets Miguel. He meets his kid, basically, his new student.
You're forgetting the original fight?
Oh, you want to talk about the flashback?
The fact that they had to bring in new footage to make it, you know, in the movie, you don't have a close-up of the crane Johnny, kick.
You don't have other footage, right? They pulled old, yes, different angles of that footage from the movie.
And his little fun fact, you were able to see William Zabka's mom.
Yeah.
Okay. Which you couldn't see in the original film, but they went into the vault and were able to grab all the old footage. And the producer said, you know what? It becomes a different movie when you bring in the close-up of the crane kick, because now, their belief was, and I agree, now you have more emotion for Johnny. So it's very, to me, that's huge that they brought that in.
Yeah, because they had to establish pretty quickly, you had to be sympathetic to this character who's politically incorrect. He's not like
very politically incorrect.
He's not at all what you're used to seeing anymore. He seems completely like from another generation. But they had to like this guy.
And to go from that new overhead shot of, you know, whoever they had play him to in reshoot, and to cut to him on the ground drunk with a flip phone.
Yep, pretty excellent.
Right? You talk about show don't tell. Like done. I get it.
Drinking Coors.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, just also like, yeah, the way that the whole thing opens, and there's so much mirroring from obviously the original movie. They find so many ways to show you like scenes you've seen, and then you know, doing it again, right? So obviously, as I mentioned, you meet Miguel, and he gets to meet this kid, and we will talk about obviously the fight, but there's so many things that you watch that and you're like, oh, I know exactly what's coming because I know exactly what I'm supposed to know is coming.
It's Miyagi and Daniel,
yeah,
right?
It's fantastic.
Back in 84.
I mean, I thought that was actually one of the most fascinating parts about the show is the formulaic beats the script was hitting, and I was so pleased to see every one of those beats. That's the thing. And it wasn't all formula, but a lot of the parts where I was like, I know what that's going to mean, and I can't wait to see it.
But,
I'm so excited
to
see it.
But it was formula, but yet it was flipped because Miyagi, although he was distant from, you know, Daniel, he was kind and he was sweet. This guy's, he's racist.
Yeah, right. Totally.
You know, he's just, which I love that. And I love the culture clash between the old generation and the young one. You know, which, you know, you didn't really see as much with Miyagi and Daniel.
Well, it's like Ben said too, with, you know, like with the Iron Eagle and everything.
Yeah,
like this is a guy that's stuck in the 80s, and being politically correct, not being racist, didn't really exist in the mid 80s. I think Pat Morita probably at that point, maybe there's a reference, maybe there isn't, he was probably called Oriental, not Asian.
Oh, surely.
And nowadays that's very politically incorrect. So like, that's like you said, Ben, I mean, that's the whole establishing part of having Iron Eagle in there. So you know that here's a guy that's stuck. So he's racist. And it makes it funny, but you're like, oh, but he's stuck.
He's driving his old Pontiac, and you can really see the wear and tear on the car. You really get a sense of how old he is.
Like, he's using a flip phone still.
Yeah. Right.
I think one of my single favorite things, and some of you guys know this watching, but I'm a gigantic 80s hair metal fan. Enormous. Like, I know more about it than almost anything. The opening song when he turns that car on is Poison, Nothing But a Good Time. And the fact that that's the song, just the fact that the song is called Nothing But a Good Time is like, this is what this guy's been doing for 34 years. He's been having nothing but a good time for 34 years.
By the way,
I think that also just sets the tone for the series. Like, totally. You know what you're getting
into. Oh, I was so thrilled.
Okay, this is probably just me, but is there something kind of cool and romantic about his life now?
Which version?
I don't know. Driving the Firebird, like, you know,
hitting on the yoga chick.
No, hey. You know, his job. Like, he doesn't really. It doesn't have to care about his job or his career. He doesn't have any pressure on him. You know, kind of living the dream. No,
I don't know about that.
No,
it's pretty rough.
If he wasn't living in the one bedroom apartment, maybe.
Yeah,
as a 52-year-old, right?
Like, there was something really stark about seeing the overhead shot of him face down, and the first thing I thought was, wow, there's something uncomfortable about a man of his age in a bed that small with a beer on the nightstand. I was just like, I was looking. I was just like, wow, that's effective. I was like, literally, the overhead shot of just that tells a story without him even saying a word. Crazy, right?
And it's weird too, because you think about most of us, Veronica, I'm not sure about you, but like when you come to LA, and you live in the valley in those type of apartments.
Yeah.
You, everybody like usually has lived or slept on someone's couch that looks like that. Like, yeah. So that's another whole nostalgic thing of like when you come to LA, you come to the valley, a lot of those complexes look like that, still have the feel, they're still here.
Well, and like, okay, to be totally fair to him also in that moment, it's not to say that just because you see that overhead shot, you know his story. It's what comes after that tells it. Because he could get up, he could literally go over, sit at a desk, start writing code, and this guy could have millions of dollars in the bank. It's not like you know much about somebody from them living in a small bed. It's more about the fact that, like, you know this guy was a hotshot in high school. Now you see this. You see the beer. The first thing he does is drinks it. You're like, okay, now I know what I need to know. You know? Yep. It's very effective storytelling. I don't know. It's quick, but it gets right to the point. So, but yeah, so we get to meet Miguel. We know he's going to reject him. We know, of course, because he lives next door, what's going to happen.
Yep.
And, oh my God, the pizza? He's buying the slice of pizza? How good was that scene? The guy has a hand on the pizza for like a solid 60 seconds.
And how many times does anyone here eat the 7-Eleven pizza?
No. I've been there.
I've done it before.
Hey, yeah, we have one across the street from AfterBuzz, and many AfterBuzzers on occasion, when we're not doing shows and we're busy running in between shows, we've done it.
I've been there. You know, that's all you have.
Hey, if you've had enough to drink, it's pretty delicious. I'm going to be honest.
That's true.
Just being honest.
When you're drinking Coors, yeah, exactly. 7-Eleven pizza is delicious.
He orders the banquet beer. He calls it the banquet beer. That's fantastic. That's fantastic. That's as good as it gets. I'll take a banquet.
Oh, I love a banquet beer.
Yeah, banquet beer. So, yeah, all right. So we know, obviously, sort of what's going to happen there. So I do want to cover this fight that we talked about before we get in, obviously, to Ralph Macchio, because that's very important. But this fight is really, really crucial, because you see it coming. Right, you know. The second that those kids show up, you see the kids, right, you see Miguel, you're like, all right, it's coming. Mm-hmm. This is going to be awesome. Except you're a dude in your 50s, and these are a bunch of teenagers, and you're going to kick these teenagers' asses.
And one more thing. He's not defending Miguel like Miyagi defended Daniel. It's because they dented his car. So again, that's why I think this is so brilliant, that it's not just a copy.
Yeah, well, I got so fired up from the second the scene even was starting, right? Like,
me too.
Because, a fist bump moment is something I always talk about. It's that moment you're kind of looking around, like, are you seeing this right now? Yeah. I get to watch the rest of the show. This is so exciting. Yeah. And you know it's coming. And obviously, you know, he unleashes his karate. And again, it's just sort of like, it's just like the pizza and a man of his age in his shape swinging the kicks. It takes you by surprise a little, but it looks pretty good, I gotta say. Well,
I thought he was a former high school wrestler. That was his background. And then when he trained for the first Karate Kid, he took it very seriously. And I think he got up to something like green belt, you know. But he took it really seriously. And so I thought his moves, I thought he was great.
No, I think he was terrific.
I mean, And the other thing, too, I mean, it's a show. But at some point, we've run into punk kids where we would love to be able to. It's not cool. It's not cool to beat anybody up, but it's a show. And, you know, you're one of those punk kids, and you'd love to just, like, lay your hand on them or, you know, do whatever.
Yeah.
That's another reason why it's, like, a fist bump moment. Because, like, in real life, you can't do it. But when you see it happening, it's hilarious. And you're like, yes, that's awesome.
And by the way, 30, 40 years ago, you could do it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It was a different world.
He probably got his ass kicked by somebody older at one point.
Yeah,
right?
Well, he did, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, right. You know?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, good point. That's strong. Strong point.
So he's like, okay, now it's my turn.
Yeah, exactly. So I think that fight's crucial. Obviously, that's a great moment, and it sets up. It's that mirroring from the original movie that you're so excited about.
It's also the fact that he can still do it.
Yeah,
like he's still able to like kick butt.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And you can't quite decide at that point. I think in the episode, at least for me, I wasn't totally like I'm on board with this guy yet. I was like, this is still a little bit like watching a train crash in slow motion, but I still like it. But I'm not totally like sympathetic to him yet.
But they're building up to it. Yeah, they're building up to the all the like little links. Yeah.
For me, I felt like I was sympathetic for him right off the bat, and this mainly comes from just the first movie where it's like, here he is, never loses a point his junior year, and here comes this kid who trains for like what a few weeks and totally just like takes his title away.
Yeah.
So like from that point alone, it's like someone training really, really hard and you're like, oh man, you're sympathetic. Like you kind of lost to someone who just kind of came in and swooped it away from you.
Well, because it's established quickly that he peaked in high school and you're waiting to see what's next. So all right, we see this fight, right? And then you know that he's drinking and driving. So there's this hit and run. Everything's falling apart. He gets fired, right? Like it truly does feel like it's falling apart. Now, flash forward after this hit and run, and we know, because we've seen LaRusso all over the billboards, we're gonna get this showdown. And so this is enter Ralph Macchio, right? This is enter Ralph Macchio. And I think,
have we met Robbie yet? The
Robert's in the next one.
It's in the second episode, but yeah, we get the phone call about him having Molly at school, and it's the first sense that we get that there's a son that you're disconnected with.
Right, and in fact, I think we have to mention too the idea that there's either ex-wife or baby mama, and she's clearly
not
right. She's a drunk, and she's right. And
I think looking for a sugar daddy.
Yeah, I think we get a little more of that a few episodes into the series. I think that's like episode 3, 4, 5 as we get that sense. The first sense we get of Robbie is this phone call, and it's that your son has drugs, and that's so you're and he tries to care a little bit. He tries to care. But also, you get the sense of his stepfather, because Ed Asner shows up, and in that whole scene, and he's like, here's the money, I bailed you out of jail, I'm buying you out, kid.
But I think great writing, because you had a mom who loved him,
yeah,
right? Who we get the impression he probably had a really sweet mother who genuinely loved him, and that's the half of Johnny that's going to come out in this series.
Right.
The bad half, well, think of the males, Ed Asner, who didn't love him, was just, I'm putting up with you, kid, because I loved your mom,
yeah.
And then we get Kreese, his, and he says he was like that bad father figure. So it's really important. But again, I compliment the writers because I think it's such a great setup.
Really interesting parallels. Yeah.
I don't think he saw him as like, he definitely saw him as a father figure, but I don't think he saw him as like a bad father figure.
Which one? Kreese?
Kreese.
No. He kind of admitted that a little later in the series, but whether he did or he didn't, we know Kreese was not a positive.
Not a good
right.
Well, he tries to kill him at the end of the first movie.
You know what I'm saying? And, but remember, if that's your idea of love,
right,
which happens with people who've been abused all the time, you're going to be confused about what love is. You think being abusive is love. And if you're someone of lower consciousness, you're going to go out and abuse other people. And if you're higher consciousness, you're going to just drink and hate yourself, which is what he's at.
Yeah. So speaking of Asner for a second, you had him on the Tomorrow Show.
I had him on my show. He's fantastic. And yeah. God, talk about a guy with Hollywood history. And again, I love the respect that these writers have for the past, because you could have cast anyone, but you know what? Go get Ed Asner, who's well into his 90s.
Yeah.
You know, I love that.
The voice from Up, among other things.
Among other things.
Very, yeah, many things. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And, you know, we knew with his son.
Right.
You know, we can see, because it's a broken family. We see what the mother's like. So we know the son's not going to be a straight shooter.
Peach, but he's kind of a high school badass pretty boy. From the second, he's like Jonathan Taylor Thomas with attitude.
Yeah.
That's a little bit what he feels like, right?
Yeah. I totally see that.
Yeah,
though.
Right? The hair. He's got the JTT hair. He does.
And the teeth.
Yeah, 100%. So I do want to get into Daniel LaRusso, but before I do, I want to remind everybody watching or listening of a couple things really quickly. We do content here at AfterBuzz for you. We put it on iTunes and on YouTube. And for us to continue doing that content, because we will never charge anything for it, we just need to keep the lights on to do it. Ratings and reviews help us do it, guys. If you want to just give us a rating or review on iTunes, let them know that you're enjoying listening to this, that you found the show, that you think it's awesome. Let's leave a comment. Leave your thoughts below. It really does help us out with what we do here. And also, we have a bunch of different YouTube channels now for all of the different genres of AfterBuzz. So there's drama, there's sci-fi fantasy. It helps you really get a great sense of if you like one show in one genre, a CW show, for instance, like The Flash, you're going to get updates about Arrow, you're going to get updates about Gotham, other shows that kind of fit the same bill for you. So check out those different channels, and please subscribe to the ones that you like, because it'll help you, keep getting updates about the shows you like, and it'll help us keep going. And
then let us know you did, so we can give you credit.
100%. If you guys leave a comment, anything, we'll read out your iTunes reviews, your YouTube comments on the shows. That's what the hosts do.
And please, you guys, when you go to our YouTube, you know, leave comments. And we're going to talk later on, you know, who is the bully in this situation. If you guys have thoughts, we want to hear it. If you have thoughts on what we're saying today, you disagree or agree, we'd love to hear it. And I want to just throw this out there right now. What other reboots do you think would work?
Yeah, I think that's an interesting
question. I think I'd love to hear the ideas from you guys, but anyway.
Yeah. So, all right, let's get into the second half of this review, which is really important, because we get the first meeting between LaRusso and Lawrence. So he goes to drop off his car, or to pick his car up, because it's
which is hit by who?
By LaRusso's daughter. Mm-hmm. Right. Which is interesting that they sandbagged that reveal until so much later. Like, we knew it was her, but it didn't come out of the bag till like way late in the season.
How bad did you feel from these bratty girls are rich and they get high and they smash my Firebird?
And he thinks that what'd she say? Like, it was some crazy method. We'd probably be locked up in his basement if you hadn't driven off.
You're
like,
oh my God. So sad. By the way, did you guys love his car?
I loved his car. Yeah.
Rick?
Oh, yeah. '80s Pontiac Firebirds Transams.
Veronica, we go to the rookie. Tell the truth. It's okay, honey.
I mean, it was a nice car. That's literally all I could say. It was nice. And I liked it.
Because remember, it gets painted and polished and buffed a little later. So someone drives up to your house and that, your thoughts, like, wow, what a cool car. Or, I would say, loser, wow, creeper.
No, that person really likes cars.
Yeah, it's a sweet car.
Appreciate the classic.
Okay. I did love the Encino. Big shout out to the Encino Commons and the Encino neighborhood. The old AfterBuzz studios, before obviously we moved, were in that neighborhood. I mean, I used to drive around there all the time, right?
Yeah, so most of the shooting was done in Tarzana and Encino, but then also down south.
Yeah,
they shot most of it in the southern area, but then any of the exteriors they needed
in Atlanta, right?
Atlanta, yeah, they came out here to do.
Yeah, everything gets shot in Atlanta these days.
Yeah, right.
So he goes in to pick the car up, and he's like, oh, I don't want to be here. I don't want to pick up the car from LaRusso. And you get that. You hear that voice, Johnny? And you're like, oh, I can't wait.
Johnny?
Are they going to fight right now? And that interaction's pretty terrific, right? He's like, oh, is this the karate guy? You kicked his ass? And he's like, well, technically, I kicked his face. And he's like, oh, you stole my girl. And you're like, oh, my God, it's 30 years later, and you're still holding on to it. And he's like dead serious.
But I love...
He's like so... Yeah, he's so proud that he still is like the big shot from that fight. Like he still... He thinks he still one-ups.
Totally.
But he kind of does.
In life.
If you see where like he owns a dealership and Johnny just kind of out and about.
Yeah, and for Daniel too. Yeah, for him too. It's like he's been through like a lot of other, I mean, he's been to Japan.
Yeah,
he's had a life fight there and everything else. So it's just like his life's pretty good.
It's like
a little piece. Johnny's a little piece in the past.
He just gives a little dig. You know, that kicks your face. But then he goes into, because his life has turned out well, and we know that both these guys have redeeming things. Then you see I want to help you, and you know he's kind and sweet. I think to me it was very realistic because it wasn't on the nose, meaning it wasn't so direct. Like, hey, douche! Oh, look at you, failure with your shitbox car. You know, it was more how it really does go 30 years later when you see a bully.
Yeah,
you know? It might be a little digging, but generally for most part, you know, people aren't gonna.
One of the best lines, one of the telling lines in that interaction is right at the end after he says, hey, Johnny, you look, it's good to see you. He doesn't finish the line. That was like my favorite moment because it's like, you know, it's what you get to say without saying it.
I feel like that moment also kind of tries to make it go back to like the original premise, which was Johnny is the villain and Daniel's a good guy. And the fact that like Johnny's like, I don't want to be here. He's giving him a hard time. And Daniel's like, you know, I'll help your car out. I'll like fix it for free and all this other stuff.
Yeah.
So it's still trying to paint that picture of like fine lines, good and bad.
100%. So, I mean, talking about sort of this is the moment when you start to ask yourself that question, right? Who do you root for? Who's the good guy and who's the bad guy? And so you meet Daniel LaRusso's family now. His wife, who I really thought was terrific, by the way. I really liked her in the show. I thought she brought levity. She was funny. She was kind of a nice balance.
And she's not the crazy wife who's all about him. She's independent. She, you know, she's working.
Yeah.
You know, you can see she's very smart with business and, you know, she's fair and balanced.
She has that line later on when they're like facing off or whatever. I think she says something like, okay, I know you want to rehash it out with your like mortal enemy from high school or whatever.
No, pretty boy.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, she
said something like that, which I found was interesting because how would she know
he was pretty?
Right, or maybe she saw photos of him winning the tournament.
Yeah,
kind of interesting. But I wonder if that was a subtle
little dig.
Yeah, that's a dig for sure
to him. Right, like whoa,
maybe. So we meet his kids. He's got the son. He's kind of video game brat.
Son,
yeah, he's great.
Who? Okay, thoughts on the son?
I mean, he's a millennial. I mean, he's not even a millennial.
He's Generation Z or whatever now Next Beyond G is.
Yeah, that's very Gen Z. Exactly.
I like that he's like the son is like beyond the pale. He's like, yeah, you're a chubby little kid. I'm not going to bother training you. I'll just train your older sister and find someone else. He's just like, you don't even get a shot. He's just like, the son's just the video game kid.
I think if this goes multiple seasons, and I hope it does for everyone's sake, you know, there's something to work with there.
Definitely.
Because they're failing the son.
I mean, look at Sopranos. You know? AJ got older, and as he got older, he became a much more interesting character.
That's right. Yeah. And I feel like the son is fodder.
Yeah,
for sure.
Definitely. He's there. He has just some funny lines. He's comic relief.
But, but I think there's more that we can do with him.
Yeah, yeah. So, but the more important kid there is the daughter, because it's obviously it was his star student, and she's friends. She's basically in the cast of Mean Girls in this movie. She's friends with the cool high school girls, but she's got a heart. She's turning her back on her best friend. All of the high school stuff that you're used to seeing in movies, right? You meet the bad kid. I really thought Kyler, by the way, it's just my opinion, he looks like 30. And I looked him up. He's not. He's young. He's like 19 years old. I thought he looked like way older.
Dude, come on, man. He's Asian. Are you kidding me? Do I look 30, dude? I told you I'm 15, man. Yeah.
You do look 15, though.
I thought I misheard you on that one. I didn't realize you were 15.
You know, it's this universe of Karate Kid. Everyone, I mean, it starts with Macchio, who was, I think, in his late 20s when he did the last, you know, part of the series. And then you have, you know, the sensei, in Terry Crews is only 3 years really older than him in Karate Kid 3. So it seems like all the ages are just bizarro in this world.
But I thought he also just looked young.
Who's that?
Ralph.
Yes, he did, but that's not in the original. No, he totally did. But my point is, so I get what you're saying. This kid looks older, but he's younger. Like, there's just, you know, there's no rhyme or reason, I feel like, with the...
Yeah, it struck me right when I first saw him. Like, he looked like a... But he's not. It's just one of those things where I guess I just thought it, and I was wrong. but I agree with you, though. Macchio always did look young. And I think, comparing, I feel like Johnny's... seems like he's in a little bit better shape.
Physically, but he always was.
Yeah.
Because I feel like in the first movie, you know, Ralph, he was 22, but he really looked 14.
Tiny.
And then, you know, the body kind of, it felt like it didn't really evolve so well after that. And Johnny was always more cut. You even see William Zabka Back to School. He's ripped.
Yeah.
You know, so, yeah, there's definitely a difference. And there's always been, I mean, I know, Elizabeth Shue, she's been vocal about for years that, you know, there's no way he would have ever won. He couldn't do karate. I'm a better karate person than him.
Because she's a soccer star.
Yeah.
Right.
She's a huge soccer star. So
she throws the haterade at him a little bit about that. And I get it, right? Because physically, come on, if there's a real fight, you know, it doesn't seem...
Well, I mean, even funnier, too, is that if you watch them at some point, I think they're cuddling or whatever, like, you see him, he's, like, this small, she can almost, like, break him.
Yeah, yeah.
She's this beautiful, curvy, like, woman, and just looks like she could just break him.
Elizabeth Shue, I was a big fan of. Loved Elizabeth
Shue. Huge. I'm sure we'll talk about her later, but say what we will, this guy does not look 56 years old.
Right.
I mean, you can talk about his body and fine, but this guy to me is—he looks 40, looks late. You know, he looks incredible.
Now as we sort of talked about Johnny and about Ralph, I think it's interesting when you mentioned going back to old franchises and bringing those stars back because it's this really, really unfair comparison that I think our culture goes through where they see an old star 20 or 30 years later and it's like, well, of course they aged.
Yeah,
like,
we hate that, though.
That's life. It's like you almost get mad about seeing Carrie Fisher in these Star Wars reboots because it's like, how she doesn't look like Princess Leia anymore, but it's like that was 40 years ago.
Yeah, it's tough.
So you got to kind of make that decision. You know, are you going to buy in? Are you going to bring those old characters back? Is it worth it? And I just think it's kind of it's a really unfair standard that our culture perpetuates.
But these guys look so good that I don't think it throws you.
And I think it works really well for this show because it's not them fighting in the ring yet; it's them coaching.
Yet,
exactly.
Yeah, and they since they've aged well, it does make it easier to watch. Like, can you imagine if like either guy was bald, had like a big old fat paunch?
Right.
It's like the believability about going back into the dojo and training, unless you actually saw them start getting ripped, is a little tough to watch. But knowing that they're pretty overall in good physical shape, and like believing that they can, you know, sit there and have these. I mean, because they're still training. They're training.
Yeah, 100%.
We're still seeing them training and do stuff.
I think another one of the things I liked so much is that they don't try to make it too big. They really do. It's like he owns a car dealership and it's in the valley. Like that's the extent of his fame. He's a rich guy, kind of. He owns four dealerships. It's in the valley in California.
Right.
Right? Like it's all valley karate. That's
the extent of the size. And isn't that the old stereotype is the high school bully becomes the has-been and the ones who are bullied go on to become you know, successful. And so, but what did you guys think of... meet Miguel's friends, Dimitri and
speaking Eli. Of kids who get bullied, right? I mean, obviously, I was a big fan of the character that becomes Hawk. I think he was great.
Eli.
Yeah, I liked all of them. What did you guys think?
I didn't see that coming. I mean, like, having those guys there was great. I didn't see, the whole, as I call it, peacocking.
Yeah.
When Eli does his transformation, like, the whole peacocking thing. I didn't see that coming.
Yeah,
I mean, I literally didn't see that coming. So, like, having those guys there and using them to help transform Johnny's character as a sensei was great.
I don't love Dimitri because I feel...
He kind of came across as like a... I don't even know if know-it-all is the negative, right word to say. Yeah, but like
not on anyone's team, it seems like.
Yeah, like I liked him, but he did have that sense of like, you know, you can't talk to them, like, we're losers, blah, 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 blah.
Well, he was believable, I thought, because that's good, in high school, I remember kids like that.
Yes,
you know, unfortunately. That's how he knows how to, his expectations are low, he's been a nerd, right? Like, they really played that one up. So I thought he was pretty believable. I liked the friends. So, but speaking of the good guys, then there's the bad guys in high school.
They're jerks.
You have the plastics, effectively, you know, and then you have Kyler, he's the bully.
I remember when I was watching those episodes, I was taking notes, and in my notes, I literally wrote, "Sam's friends suck."
Yeah.
Because they're just so bad and mean.
Right. Yeah, I mean, the high school bully stereotype, it works. It continues. It is interesting to see them go so hard with Zabka's character and making him just how he was. You know, nerds, you get babes, you know, like, you kick his ass, you punch him in the face, all that stuff.
Yeah.
And then you're supposed to kind of hate these bullies. You're supposed to kind of love him. They're not that different, really.
No,
he is different.
It's great. But, yeah. That's why it's great.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, Kyler, you know, when he's at that that family dinner and he, oh, how'd you get beat up? Oh, this guy Johnny beat me up. And that pushes
Macho's,
you know, Daniel's buttons. And, you know, okay, as this unfolds, Daniel is a victim of post-traumatic stress disorder. You know, to be beat up by five guys in skeleton outfits, have his bike thrown down. You know what I mean?
Right.
And so I think, and usually, you know, you can either, if you're abused, you know, as someone is abused, you generally either become, what do they say? You become an abuser or you become a protector. You know, it's like you almost become a dragon or a dragon slayer. But it's usually one or the other. And so I feel like, you know, they psychologists say this is a charge.
Yeah.
So it ignites a charge in him. Like, what? Johnny, boo, you poor kid. Johnny beat you up. I got beat up. Oh, my God.
Right.
Like, and boo. And this is the post-trauma. And this is what, of course, is going to drive him into action to now, you know, no more, like, nicey-nicey.
Right.
You know, like, let me fix your car or whatever. So,
I mean, not to mention, again, you know, you can't be an adult and beat up a kid anymore.
No.
So that's
right.
You know,
but I think it's extra, though, on his part, because it struck such a chord in him.
You also can't believe, though, at the same time that you're hearing this, you're paying attention to this, that Kyler would be like, oh, I'm not going to have your, like, beautifully prepared, perfect sushi. I'm not going to even have a bite. I'm going to be like the kid who asks for fish sticks. You're like, I don't even care. You're just like, you suck, man. You're like, there's no way that I'm going to like your character. You're not coming back.
Very revealing.
This. Yeah, exactly.
Very revealing.
So, okay, this begs a good question that we teased at the beginning of the episode, but who, like, truthfully, who is the good guy, who's the bad guy, what team are we on at this point? At the end of two episodes, because I'm hooked at this point. I mean, I was just grinning ear to ear at the end of two episodes, but I was trying to decide, who am I really rooting for?
Well, can we start by discussing the theory that was been propagated online forever.
For years, right?
Right, How I Met Your Mother at the bro mitzvah of Barney. His interpretation was that the Karate Kid was Johnny.
Yes.
And Johnny went on this journey and learned this valuable lesson. And then this is what began the internet buzz of, like, hey, Daniel's the bully. And so then, now laying that out there, I would love to hear what millennials think, because I know most millennials think Revenge of the Nerds is a date rape movie. So, it just always blows me away. So I'd love to hear, knowing that, take it from there. So you're not even what you think now, but what you think. Who was the...
Of Daniel's a bully?
Was Daniel a bully or Johnny?
Short answer, no. I don't think either of them were. I think Daniel, after, like, rewatching the first movie and then seeing some of the things that Johnny says to Daniel, I think Daniel was definitely an instigator and antagonized Johnny for absolutely no reason. Like, there's that one part where after Miyagi goes to the Cobra Kai dojo and Kreese is like, you guys can't touch him until the tournament. And then the scene after, Daniel, like, Johnny comes up and he's like making fun and antagonizing Johnny because he's like, oh, you can't touch me. Like, no reason did he have to do that. Like, he's still the one who can get beat up in this instance. So I don't think either of them are necessarily bad or the villains, but I do start to see that Daniel was just an instigator, like with some of the fights, and then antagonized him for no reason.
What do you think, Rick?
Man, you're talking to the guy that saw this movie in the theater.
Come on, Rick, don't leave me hanging, baby.
You're talking about the guy that saw it in the theater, and William Zabka in real life is a very nice guy, but as Johnny Lawrence, he's always been the bad guy. He's always been the bully. So, I mean, if you're talking, like, at that point, I mean, I still, no, Daniel is not the instigator. He's just coming to a new town. He's just trying to fit in.
He's just trying to fit in.
And Johnny is making life rough for him.
I've yelled sweep the leg more times than probably many phrases in my life. So I'm with you on that. I grew up, obviously, this guy was a bad dude. I just think a lot of those revisionist history articles, I've seen similar articles about Jar Jar Binks being like a criminal mastermind. In those Star Wars That's like a thing people say. There's like a lot of theories about stuff like this. And I think you can look at it from that point of view. But the bottom line is the one guy who's like a trained karate master resorts to violence to like punk the other kid.
Well, you know, okay. Here's my theory on why the revisionist history starts to seep in. I know. Going to get a lot of crap from this on YouTube and iTunes, but okay. You know, I grew up in a time where I don't want to get into my bullying stories, but I saw really, really bad things, like dirt put in kids' mouths and you know, kids having their clothes ripped off in front of everyone in the high school, you know, torn off them. I remember there was a kid who had an earring and a tail, and they pinned him down the jocks, and they cut the tail off. And these are like serious infractions and crimes and traumas. And that was our world. Now, bullying today is more social media. It's helicopter parenting. It's different. And that is great that that's gone. But it has desensitized, in a sense, audiences. So for me, when I saw Johnny as a kid, I was terrified because I knew so many Johnnies and all of his friends. And I moved to a town, and that's exactly what I dealt with. And I remember seeing it, and it was painful for me to watch this kid go through this. And again, you're talking 4-on-1. Like, so if we really broke that down, you guys, that is like assault and battery, mm-hmm. multiple people. And then if we even look, if there were kicks to the head, that's assault with a lethal weapon.
Yeah.
You know, so, you know, you can see why he's traumatized. To me, there is no discussion. Yeah, you know, did, you can have fun with that argument all you want, but at the end of the day, no. Now, what we learn is Johnny is a victim of abuse himself. He has this, he had Stockholm syndrome, probably with Kreese. He had no relationship with a father, and any relationship he kind of saw, a male figure, was distant Ed Asner, who we can tell is not. So I get it. You know, I get why he got there, but anyway, I think firmly Daniel was the victim.
And then what Johnny learned to excel at was striking first, striking hard, no mercy. So.
Here's the thing that's so interesting about this. I agree with everything you guys just said. It sounds like all four of us are pretty much in agreement that that Johnny was the bully. Why do we all love the concept of strike first, strike hard so much? Why do we all love Cobra Kai so much? I love Cobra Kai.
Now, because to me, I love it because they're the underdogs, and we've become a culture that's so soft that some of these guys need that tough love. So now, but I don't love that. I'm sorry, I'm not with you guys.
Saying like the concept of hitting somebody. No. I'm saying like literally I find Cobra Kai, the mythology, even sort of the cartoony nature of Kreese as a villain in the original movie, so appealing.
But do you love them
awesome.
As villains, or do you love them as you want to be part of it?
It's just awesome.
I love little fat old Miyagi who's sweet and wants to help people. Yeah. And then guess what? When he needs to step up and show the bad guys, you know, how it's done. And I love that overall philosophy of karate, because the martial arts, most of them weren't developed. They were more of a philosophy. They weren't developed. Yes, there were people who took it and it was to hurt.
Yeah.
But it was, if the Buddhist monks and the Shaolin monks, like, it wasn't about that.
But I mean, you're as big a wrestling guy as I've ever met, right?
Yeah, huge.
So for me, there's a quality to Cobra Kai that is the same appeal that a great heel has.
You got it.
And that's why I'm saying, at the end of the day, I care a lot more about Cobra Kai than I care about Ralph Macchio.
And that's why we love D-Generation X.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, they were anti-heroes, but an anti-hero will take up and do something decent, and that's what they're doing now. But back then, they didn't. They just were bad.
Straight bad guys.
So, you know, anyway.
All right, so I think it's going to wrap us up for part one of our Karate Kid Cobra Kai review. We have three more parts, four more parts. I'm not even really sure. We have literally eight more episodes to talk about. So stick with us, and we are going to break down the rest of the show for you guys. Thank you so much for watching. Thanks for listening.
Ben, where do we find you?
You guys can find me personally at Ben Bateman Media, Twitter, Instagram. Kevin, where can the folks find you?
At Undergaro, and check me out on our Billions, our Jersey Shore, and our AfterBuzz TV Bar Rescue Show.
Rick Hong.
Hey guys, you guys can find me on all social media at Rick Hong, RCKHONG. Speaking of wrestling, I will be covering GLOW, the Gorgeous Ladies of Wrestling, next Sunday at 5 o'clock. And every Sunday, I cover Netflix picks here. Veronica, where can everybody find you?
You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at it's me, Veronica_V.
Excellent. Yeah. Thanks, guys. We'll see you soon.
Cobra Kai!
Cobra Kai!
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV Network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
No mercy!
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.